Hello, welcome everyone to another episode of Microsoft Developer Radio. I am one of your co-hosts today. My name is Peter Ladotti, and I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. And I'm joined by my counterparts, Mr. Brian Hitney and Andrew Duthie, who are out there in cyberspace somewhere. Hello, guys.
Holla, holla, hey. Holla.
How's everybody doing today? That was like the slowest intro ever, right?
Yeah. Doing so, great, thank you.
So if you guys have been following the most recent series of episodes of Developer Radio that Brian, Andrew, and I have been doing, we've been spending a lot of time talking about using Windows Azure to back-end mobile applications. And Andrew, over a course of many series, many parts in the series, has talked to us about mobile services, web API, all sorts of things. And we thought we'd take today to cover a bunch of new news and functionality that was introduced this past week, about mid-June here, to Azure Mobile Services that really expands upon what you could do previously. And I thought that would be really interesting to take a show, a whole episode, and go through some of that and talk about that. So to kick us off with the first set of features, I'm going to have Brian go first. But just a reference for you guys, there is a blog post that Scott Guthrie posted, I believe it was on June 18th, that lists out all these things. And that could be an outline for what we're going to cover in the show. So we'll put that in the show notes so you can check it out. But Brian, tell us about some of the new things.
Yeah, well, thanks very much, Peter. So it is pretty exciting. A lot of new features in mobile services, and it certainly makes it a lot easier to handle some of your code before you really had to go directly to the portal and really kind of work with the editor that was there. And if you wanted to do code management for that, you would kind of have to take it out and do it yourself. And so now there's Git support directly in there. We'll demo that and why that's so important in just a minute. So that, and then custom APIs is another really big thing. And I think we'll probably dive into that too, just once we get into the demo part. But we don't want to say too much quite yet. Might as well just do it in the demos. But those are two of the real big things that were just released, and there's a whole lot of other little things that go along with it. So I'm really excited about it. It really makes it a lot easier to develop and to, you know, kind of have your code in your own Git repository, and it really opens up the door for doing additional packages, which I think Andrew is going to talk about.
Very cool. Yeah, so one of the things that's neat in the new support is the idea of, as you said, custom APIs. But custom APIs on their own, you know, have a certain amount of utility. The custom APIs in the current release are based on Node.js, much like the server-side events that we showed in our earlier series. When you have a table event, you know, the basic CRUD events, create, update, read, delete, you would have an associated event that you could handle and then write some scripts in Node.js to deal with those particular events. So the custom APIs expand on that, and the current version, as I said, you know, Node.js, again, there is support coming for .NET-based APIs as well. But the cool thing is they also announced the ability to do Node packages. And for folks who aren't familiar with Node packages are really sort of, if you think of an analogy, they're very similar to jQuery plugins in the sense that they're packages of functionality that represent common things that people need to do in server-side scripts in Node. So think of things like validation or, you know, any of a number of operations that you might need to do in a server-side script. You can simply pull in a package that makes it really easy to do that with very little code. And that's actually tied in with the Git support. So you could actually, you know, clone your Git repository on your local machine and then use just the Node package manager to install that particular package that you want and then do a pushback to Azure with the code that you updated. And then you can simply require that package in your script and away you go. So it really makes it easy to leverage work that a lot of other people have already done to build these packages of functionality and leverage those in your own scripts.
Very cool. Now, the other big thing is, and I know that this matters, is particularly because we do a lot of presenting in front of general audiences, and when you set up a Windows Azure mobile service, in preview it's free, but you required a SQL Azure database for a great deal of the functionality. You could get away without one, I suppose, but really, since so much of it is centered around data management, you really needed a SQL Azure database. So the price point was a minimum $5 a month, basically, for 100 megabytes of data. So really wasn't free, even though mobile services was free. But now we announced a free 20 megabyte tier. So that's pretty exciting to me, because even though 20 megabytes isn't a whole lot of data, it's free is free. And it's great that you can get something scaffolded up and running, test it, you know, and play with it. And actually, 20 megabytes can hold more than I think most people realize. And you can put some stuff in there before you start having to worry about expanding your database size out. So it's great for developers who just want to tinker and not have to worry about a monthly fee.
Yeah, and that's a really big advantage in terms of getting started. We do want to make sure that people understand that the 20 meg free database offer is 12 months. So you will need to, you know, to make the additional arrangements after that 12 months. But you know, it's a great way to get, you know, get your service up and running, get it started, you know, as you said, tinker and play around. And it is good for both dev and test as well as production.
Yeah, nothing is free forever in life. But and another thing to note, a lot of these services are still technically in preview mode, so they don't have a cost associated with them now. But there is a chance or a likelihood that when they become generally available, they probably will have a cost associated with them.
Quite right, Peter. I mean, I imagine they would. And frankly, the ease of which we can develop some of these solutions. I've got a bunch of apps in the store now that leverage this, and then because it's cross-platform as well, it'd be so easy now to take some of these solutions and go cross-platform. I love mobile services. To me, it's the most exciting thing we're doing with Windows Azure. So why don't we just go ahead and start jumping into some demos and show some of these things in action?
Sure. I believe you're going to do that.
Yeah. All right. All right. So
do we want to talk about, let's not give a short shrift to the notification hubs that were also, there's a newer functionality added this week that we can talk about later after the demo. And one thing I want to mention there, it's ancillary to mobile services because it's something that's really good when paired with it, but it's not part of mobile services. And it's known as the Service Bus Notification Hub in Windows Azure. And this was introduced back in January in preview. It still is. And it had support for iOS and Windows 8. And what they just announced this past week is now it supports Android also. Ironically, at this point, it does not yet have support for Windows Phone. That is labeled as coming soon. So what is it, basically? In mobile services, one of the scenarios that I think Andrew covered in one of the earlier episodes was the ability to do push notifications. So you can have a mobile service, and if something changes in your backend database, it could trigger a push notification down to the client. And in the examples that we've used on past episodes of this show, you essentially, from the trigger event code or whatever it is, you'd call directly into the push notification service of the respective platform you're trying to reach, whether it's the Windows 8 or iOS or Android. What the notification hub does is essentially allow you to, with a single message, push out a notification to all of the platforms and across, you know, an unbelievably large number of clients. So in theory, millions of device clients that could be registered for your service could receive the push notification at once. So it happens on a scalable notion using a pub-sub model, which makes it really easy from a development standpoint to literally write one line of code to push a notification and have it go out across lots of devices in a scalable way versus having to individually manage devices and all the device registrations in your application in your own database as you might have to in a regular solution. So we'll talk more about that as we go along. But Brian, let's get back to you and tell us about, the custom APIs.
Let's dive in. What was that, Andrew?
Well, before we jump into the demos, I wanted to just kind of outline a scenario here because I really want to emphasize the extent to which mobile services has really grown to the point where it really can supply an end-to-end back-end solution that can really replace an entire website. So, you know, I talked to you guys kind of a little bit beforehand about the evolution of the Community Megaphone website. And, you know, I've been working with some guys in the community to kind of build the next version of this on top of ASP.NET Web API. But we had, at the time that we were kicking things off, we'd looked at Azure Mobile Services and kind of decided, well, it's a little harder to do validation in the server-side scripts. There's really not, you know, there are some pieces that are missing that make it not not quite viable to be a full-on replacement, but with the addition of the custom APIs, you know, with the addition of the support for HTML5 and JavaScript, because we talked about that from the client side, you know, that they were consistently adding more and more clients. So originally it started off at launch with Windows Phone, Windows 8, and iOS, and then expanded to Android and expanded to HTML5 and JavaScript. So with the ability to very rapidly build clients for all of these different platforms, this really becomes such a powerful server-side platform that I'm really thinking we may move to leverage mobile services as a full-on replacement for that whole site, and simply use the HTML and JavaScript support to build out that that particular client.
Yeah, that's great. And Andrew, I think you have a coined a new term there, an end-to-end back-end. I like that.
That is right, really, I guess the point that I was trying to make is just that there were some pieces, you know, mobile services was a great solution when it launched in preview initially, but it has become even more complete, as particularly with this most recent release.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So so let's go ahead and jump into at least a couple of quick demos, and let's see what we could do. All right, so what we're looking at here is the portal. I've got a whole lot of other screens open because we're going to dive into a few different things, but I've created a Windows Azure mobile service here really just for test purposes, and I'm going to click on the data tab, and what I've got is a simple table just called Earthquake. And by the way, this is largely built off of part of a project that we were doing called API Mash, which is a project, it's up on GitHub. In fact, I've got that tab open here, so github.com/APIMash, and Andrew and a few other people on our team put together a bunch of starter kits for doing different things with some APIs that are out there, and this one, one of them that I happen to do, uses the USGS Earthquake feed. So that's part of what one of these solutions is around. But just to piggyback off that a little bit, I've got my data tab here, which has all the tables in my database, so I just created one called Earthquake. And the nice thing, and this is not new, this has been here for a little while, but we have a job scheduler. And the cool thing about this is that we can create scheduled jobs to run at a certain interval, in this case, say every 15 minutes, and do something. And so just to give you a demo for how easy some of this stuff is, if I click on my scheduled job here, and we look at some of the code, I have a job, and what we're going to do is create, in this case, just a arbitrary JavaScript object, say, with a place, a magnitude, and a timestamp that might represent an earthquake. And then we'll just call tables.getTable. We'll get the name of that table, which was called Earthquake, and then we're going to insert this row. So if I click Run once, this job should run. I haven't even tested this yet, so this is like a raw test here. And if I go back now to our data tab, we should see that we have that one record in here. And there it is, and it put the row in. And that's perhaps not too surprising, but what it gets really simple to do then is to write some JavaScript that goes out and consumes a feed, a JSON feed from USGS, and we'll put all of that inside a mobile service as well. And the app that's in the store is called Earthquake Explorer, and it will use all of the data inside an earthquake table, and it gives you pagination, a way to sort through the data, and so on. So a great way to expand this a little bit now is with custom APIs, and this is where we're going to start diving into some of the new stuff. So,
now, if Brian,
go ahead.
Interrupt you for a second, because I think that this is a key point. If somebody wanted to consume a service, for example, that was throttled, and if they were trying to call that service directly from their app, and were finding that some of those requests were being denied because they had too many requests in a given period of time, using a job like this might give them the opportunity to make less frequent calls to the service and still have that service be available, that service data be available to their apps through that service instead. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great way to do it. In this case, you know, consuming the USGS feed is a great example of that, only because the data is the same regardless of the client. So there's no point in having, you know, say thousands of users all requesting that same feed over and over and over again. And that's what's going to trigger the throttling, right? And that, it makes sense why the APIs like to do that, and they're going to throttle you down. And the only caveat There is sometimes there's usage restrictions around importing data and whatnot. So you just have to kind of be careful, make sure you understand the terms of use, and not just with mobile services, but everything else. Any kind of data that you're consuming, make sure you understand that. But yeah, absolutely, getting around throttling. And then also, this was brought up by somebody at a recent in-person event that where we were going through this API mash stuff, is they preferred this approach because they are writing the code that talks to mobile services then. And so they have a contract there, right, where they're writing the back end and they're writing also the client code. And it's just something they're responsible for, and they understand that. So if there's a change in the USGS feed, which I wouldn't suspect there would be a change in it, but suppose there was, it's not going to break your client. It might break your mobile service job that's going to go consume that, but you could easily jump in here and fix that. Also, if that feed goes down for a short period of time, there's obviously no SLA associated with that, but if you were writing a serious application where you wanted to offer some type of SLA, then you know that's something that you'd have to bear in mind, is that you're really at the whim of all of these APIs you might be consuming, and if they're going down, then your application goes down with it. Not that mobile services will be completely immune to any outages, but then again, that's something you control through the scalability and whatnot, and most people would rather have that control themselves than just on you know, the APIs that they're consuming. So that's a real important scenario. In fact, most of the APIs that we looked at, and we know this, Andrew, just from our calls, but so many of them are throttled that it makes you a little bit leery of putting a solution out there, because you know that as soon as you have a couple hundred people download it, you might hit that usage cap
right
pretty quickly.
Yeah, because typically these APIs, they're all tied to an API key, and unless you configure your application so that the end user has to go out and get their own API key, which is not a very convenient way of doing things for the user, it does make it really hard to scale when you have, you know, hundreds or thousands of people downloading your app.
Absolutely. So the next thing we'll do, I'm actually going to click on the Earthquake mobile service right now, and you can see that I've got a channels table and then an earthquakes table. So this has been running for some time, because you can see we've got about almost 6,000 earthquakes inside that table. And one of the problems that you've had up to this point is that every operation inside mobile services had to go against one of the tables that you had to find. So it would always be going against the channels table or the earthquakes table, and you could then within mobile services write script that responds to any of the CRUD operations. So if you're doing an insert or a get, you can customize that. But one of the challenges then is, well, what if you wanted to do something a little outside of that? What people would sometimes do is they would create a dummy table. They might call it hack, and then that would then give them insert, update, and delete scripts for the hack table, and then they can write their own custom logic inside those scripts. So it made sense to make this a little bit more extensible and not require us to actually create a hack table just to support our own scripts, was to come up with an API section is where we can then author our own code. So just as in a demo from what I have here, is if I click on API, what I decided to do was create an API, and we're just going to call it Top Quakes. And we can, by the way, we can set any permissions we'd like based off of the verb. So in this case, I'm going to have a get verb, which will be open to everybody, but then anything else requires an application key to do it. That's just an arbitrary choice, but it just shows you how you can lock this down, particularly if you're going to be changing data, you'd probably want to authenticate people, but perhaps reading would be a public thing. So if I click on this and open up the Top Quakes API, you could see that we're only really implementing a single verb, and that's get. But what I decided to do was, and there was no particular reason why I chose to do it this way, except just to kind of show something a little bit different than what you see in Scott Guthrie's blog, which is great, that goes through some of these demos. But I decided to actually write a little bit of SQL here, where I'm just going to do select star from the earthquakes table where the magnitude is greater than, in this case, I'm just specifying, for example, 7. We could also pass in a parameter to this if we'd like to. But then we can then use the MS SQL object, which is built in to mobile services. Now, unlike your normal scripts that you get as part of your tables, the MS SQL object is brought in as a package for you. Here, just like it has up in the comments, when you create a new API, is you do have to actually reference this by calling request.service.msql. But then I can query the table, and then assuming we get some data from that, then we're just going to spit that out directly to the browser. And so what I've done over here, I've got this still open, where you can see that I've got a whole bunch of JSON data coming back from everything in response to that. So it's really kind of a cool thing. If you wanted to write a custom API basically on top of your data, or that consumes something or goes out and does something, you don't have to hack it up anymore. It's all built in, and you can kind of go crazy with it, which is kind of a lot of fun. It's a neat way now that you have to extend your mobile service even further. Okay, the next thing I think we're going to look at is doing a little bit of source code integration. And that was something else that was just announced. And this is pretty cool. And Andrew, you'll follow up with this after I'm done talking here about it, because it really opens the door for even further extensibility. But what I've done is, if I click on the configure tab for my third mobile service, I've got a Git URL associated with this. And I can copy this to my clipboard. And if I have a local Git repository, I can clone now all of these scripts into that repository, and then edit them and then push them directly from my local repository. And that's really helpful, because one of the things we mentioned earlier is how you had to maintain this yourself. And that's kind of a scary thing, because you're inside this window editing your code, and then it would be up to you to copy it and store it someplace where it's secure.
Right.
And backed up.
Heaven forbid you should accidentally, you know, maybe you haven't had your third cup of coffee and you space out and you click the delete button for your service, and the next thing you know, you've kind of nuked your service entirely. What do you do? Well, right. If you've got your stuff in source control, you're covered, but...
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's just nice to be there. Obviously, you know, no more manual cutting and pasting of the source code. So I've copied this path into my clipboard, and I'm just going to use, I admit I'm not much of a command line type of person. I do like my GUIs, and I happen to be using SourceTree here for this demo. It doesn't really matter which tool, which Git tool you use. You could use whatever you're most comfortable with. But if I add a repository and I paste that path in here, and then give it a destination path, for example, I'll just put it in my Git folder, my third Windows Azure mobile service, and then say clone. What it will do, it will go out. In fact, we can look at the full output here, and even better, we'll just open up that path, which is right here. And I can see it cloning everything out from API, scheduled jobs, and tables that happen to be in there. And that's really cool. That's a nice way now for us to be able to play around with everything that is inside our mobile service. We can make edits directly to these files, obviously do diffs and do everything else that we would expect to be able to do with proper versioning, and then we can then automatically push them out if we'd like to, or manually deploy them, which is what you have to do before source control integration. So really cool to see that. Now, you and I were talking earlier, Andrew, and you said this is really important for the next thing that's brand new, which is package support. So do you want to dive into that a little bit?
So I'll just talk about it briefly. I mean, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but one of the things that that is kind of nice that's built into mobile services is there is sort of a range of packages that are already pre-installed that you can leverage inside of, say, the table scripts and things like that. So for example, when we did our show on notifications, when you do push notifications, typically you're going to leverage, there's a package that exposes the Windows notification service inside of those table scripts, right? That's simply a Node package that enables that particular functionality. So there's already a set of those packages that have been pre-installed for your use. What's key about this latest release is the ability to take any arbitrary Node package that you want to use and install that and use it in your custom APIs. And then eventually that'll also be supported in the table scripts as well. And the key is that there really isn't a way on the server side You know, when you go into the Azure Management Portal, there isn't a button that says, let me install a Node package. So the way that they've done it is that once you've cloned your repository of your scripts and such, you can simply use the Node Package Manager locally and install that that desired package in your local source tree, and then push those changes out to your mobile service. And there's actually an example of that on Scott Guthrie's blog post about that.
Very cool. Well, that's great to see that because, you know, in fact, that's been one of the issues is how do you get some of these packages in there. So now it would be very easy to take your mobile service through the APIs and extend it really to whatever you can do with Node today, right? Bring in any arbitrary package you'd like and do something with that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, for folks who maybe haven't played with Node yet, or you know, might find it a little sort of different or unusual. It really is. It's just an environment for JavaScript. And so if you played with jQuery at all, if you've played with any jQuery plugins, if you played, you know, there's very little difference other than that we're not working with client side stuff and the DOM. We're just really writing more kind of pure code. But ultimately, the way that objects are structured are the same, you know, the syntax is going to look very similar. So it really is an environment that most people who've done any web programming at all are probably going to get fairly comfortable with pretty quickly.
All right, thank you, Andrew, for that information. That's pretty cool stuff. Now, what we were hoping to show, but we don't have enough time in this episode, we were going to talk a little bit more about the notifications. And that's one thing, by the way, Peter, that I noticed is that you have to go through, say, if you have a script, you're iterating through and you're sending notifications individually. So the notification hub is pretty cool. Do you want to talk about what we'll do in the next episode?
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that feature. As I mentioned earlier in this episode, this was a functionality that was added to Azure as a preview back in January for iOS and Windows 8. And the new news that is this week in mid-June right now is that there's support for Android. We're still waiting for support for Windows Phone, but we'll talk about that as it gets here. But I think the very cool thing is instead of having to send out push notifications and manage all the clients you're going to send it to, this service does that for you, where the clients can register with the service, and with a single call to the API, you can push out a notification to, you know, large numbers of clients and have it scale up, you know, based on a pay-as-you-go model with Azure. So we'll dive more into that, maybe do a little demo of that, and talk about that service in a future episode. So thanks, Brian and Andrew, for showing us some of the new features with the Git source control mobile services and the custom APIs. I think the custom API stuff is fantastic. It really opens up the doors to a whole lot of new big back-end scenarios using mobile services and Windows Azure. And thanks to all the listeners today for joining us, and we'll see you next time, another episode of Microsoft Developer Radio.